Translation. After sitting on your seat, practice the three kinds of breathing exercises, and thus gradually control the life air, the mind and the senses. Completely free yourself from all material contamination and with great patience begin to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. In this verse, the entire yoga system is described in summary, and special stress is given to the breathing exercises for stopping the disturbing mind. The mind by nature is always oscillating, for it is very fickle, but the breathing exercise is meant to control it. Do you know what oscillate means? You can guess from the context. Yeah, it means to go back and forth. Sankalpa, vikalpa, sankalpa, vikalpa. We could say that's the oscillation of the mind. This process of controlling the mind might have been very possible in those days, millions of years ago, when Dhruva Maharaj took to it. But at the present moment, the mind has to be fixed directly on the lotus feet of the Lord by the chanting process. By chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, one immediately concentrates on the sound vibration and thinks of the lotus feet of the Lord. And very quickly one is elevated to the position of samadhi, or trance. If one goes on chanting the holy names of the Lord, which are not different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, naturally his mind becomes absorbed in thought of the Lord. It is here recommended to Dhruva Maharaj that he meditate on the Supreme Guru or Supreme Spiritual Master. The Supreme Spiritual Master is Krishna, who is therefore known as Chaitya Guru. This refers to the Supersoul who is sitting in everyone's heart. He helps from within, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, and he sends the spiritual master who helps from without. The spiritual master is the external manifestation of the Chaitya Guru, or the spiritual master sitting in everyone's heart. The process by which we give up our thoughts of material things. Just speak to them. We don't understand Tamil. And so, just for those who understand Tamil, you can speak to them. The process by which we give up our thoughts of material things is called pratyahara, which entails being freed from all material thoughts and engagements. The word abhidhyayet, which is used in this verse. You can go on. You finished already. Indicates that unless one's mind is fixed, one cannot meditate. The conclusion, therefore, is that meditation means thinking of the Lord within. Whether one comes to that stage by the Ashtanga Yoga system or by the method recommended in the Shastras, especially for this present age, to constantly chant the holy name of the Lord, the goal is to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pranayamena trivrita paranendriya manomalam shanaya vyodasya vidhyayen Manasaguru-nagurum. Narad Muni is describing the yoga system. Can you understand what I'm saying? You didn't understand that. You better translate for him, isn't it? Better. That means you have to sit next to him. You have to tell him, because you may not understand that. And Narad Muni is describing the yoga system and how to meditate. And he says to meditate on the Guru. Here we have the translation. Guru is Chaitya Guru, Krishna. And actually, that's not just Prabhupada's speculation or the speculation of the previous acharyas, which Srila Prabhupada has translated. But we'll see in the upcoming verses a description of Krishna, description of his form. I guess you could say that this refers to the Guru, but this is a standard description of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is coming up in the next few verses. The form of the Lord. Narada himself is the Guru here, but he's not such a cheating Guru as is common in the modern age to recommend that you just meditate on me. No need to meditate on the Supreme Lord. Guru is a guru because he teaches one to meditate on the Supreme Lord. Or surrender to him. Beyond meditation is surrender. And service. Surrender means service. Love. For him. So this Narada Muni is describing the form of the Lord. Narada Muni is himself the principal authority on worship of the form of the Lord, as he is the compiler of the Narada Pancharatra, which is the authoritative treatise on deity worship. Although Narada Muni himself, we don't have any record of him engaging in deity worship, installing deities. He travels all over the universe, and he is the authority on deity worship. He travels all over the universe and preaches Krishna consciousness. He also resides permanently in Vaikuntha and praises the Lord. So how does he do that? Well, the Lord, the Supreme Lord, gives power to his devotees to do things which most people can't do or can't even think of doing. Right? The devotees of the Lord can have various forms to perform various services. They can expand into various forms to perform various services. One form isn't enough for one who's eager to serve, so they take various forms. And Narada Muni, he's an expert guru, and he teaches his disciples according to their need, what is required for them to come to Krishna consciousness. He's not only expert in chanting the names of the Lord, he's not only expert in deity worship, but he's, from this description we understand, that he's also expert in describing the yoga system, as he's doing here at the Dhruva Maharaj, the yoga system that culminates in yoga, actual yoga, which means becoming linked with the Supreme Lord. Actual yoga is not a process. We say yoga because the goal is yoga. But actual yoga means the goal of yoga, which is to link. Of course, bhakti yoga, from the very beginning, there is linking with the Supreme Lord. In other processes, there isn't. Therefore, bhakti yoga is actual yoga. All the other processes of yoga, they are stepping stones to bring one to bhakti, in which one is actually linked with Krishna. The proponents of an impersonally conceived system of yoga, which is actually not the process of yoga which is taught by the real yogeshwaras, or the real masters of yoga. The real process is dhyana vastita manasa. What is it? Dhyana vastita tadyatena manasa pashanti yam yogina. The process is situated in meditation to meditate on Krishna. But the impersonally conceived process of Patanjali is that is impersonally conceived. So those who propagate this, or who are proponents of this, they say that, well, bhakti, that's a stepping stone to this process, because that helps one to become pious, and then the mind can begin to be controlled, and then, but that's for people who are very much rajasic. So that's good for them, and it helps them to gradually come to sattva guna, and then they can forget all this jumping around and sit. When they actually become more advanced, they can sit down in one place and meditate on the tip of their nose. But the devotees find the tip of Krishna's lotus feet much more attractive than the tip of their own noses. But they can't, the yogis, they don't attain that. Even after much endeavor, pantastu koti shats, koti vatsara sambhragam vayor athapi manaso muni pungavan. The best munis who are not in the category of Narad Muni, they're just munis. Even though their mind going at the speed of wind for millions of years. So pyasti yatprabhada sinya vinchintyatatve, they cannot even come to the outer limit of he who is avichintyatatva, he who is that principle, or actually person, who is beyond the ratiocination. You don't know that word. It means the logical process of thinking of even very highly intelligent persons. They think that the yogis think that the process is by a mental process. But the devotees, they understand that yoga is a process of the soul, which is by nature Satchidananda. All transcendentalists will accept that. But they don't really know what ananda is. Their only idea of ananda is negation of the negative. Just block out all the bad things and then you experience happiness. But that in itself does not describe happiness. It only describes negation of unhappiness. So even logically they should be able to understand that if the absolute truth is described as Satchidananda, that ananda should have some basis more than a negation of the bad things of this world. What they say, merging in oneness, but that's not nearly as attractive as the stealing Krishna's lunchbox, for instance. What's the use of just floating in some impersonal space? Better to grab Krishna's lunchbox and take some laddus. Krishna's laddus are better than merging in impersonal Brahman. So this Narad Muni, he's recommending Not stealing Krishna's laddus, that's very advanced level. Giving Krishna, offering laddus to Krishna. One's very advanced, you can steal the laddus also. Not recommended in the early stage. Prabhupada would do that kind of thing sometimes. Once he came in the temple in London, Radha Landanishwar, the temple room was so small. Krishna, you felt like you could just shake hands with him. The deity room was very, so the crowded. So the plate was there. Just the offering was finished. The aarti was going on. Prabhupada told the pujari in the middle of offering, give me that sweet. Of course, Krishna had already eaten. But sometimes Prabhupada would eat it. They're going to make the offering and Prabhupada would start taking the sweets. Don't you do that. Better not tell anyone either, because they'll think, oh, people who are not advanced or people who don't understand what is raga bhakti, they'll think that Prabhupada is just, he's an offender, he's not controlling his senses. And Prabhupada said that sometimes too. In New Vrindavan, he was taking sweet rice, the milk, thick milk cooked down. He brought more, he had a big pot and he served Prabhupada, took more, took the whole pot, and then he was looking. He said, Prabhupada, shall we bring more? He said, Prabhupada, yes, when I eat this sweet rice is so good, when I eat it, I cannot control my senses. So, he can do, he can eat any of it. There are so many instances in Stockholm, when Godbrother told me he cooked a big pot of halakha for Prabhupada. Prabhupada ate it all. And then one time, one of the devotees, they cooked a big pot of curry, sabji. And they were thinking that, well, after Prabhupada's eaten, then we'll serve all the team around Prabhupada. Prabhupada ate it all the sabji. And then he said, when you cook for your spiritual master, you cook for him only. Don't cook for anyone else. So Prabhupada, he taught too. So taught such beautiful deity worship. Here in deity worship, here in South India, people are very much attracted to deity worship, more than kirtan, generally speaking. People, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, the people in South India, they know archan, but they do not know kirtan. You know what archan means? You know? Yeah. It means deity worship. So people are very attracted to that. And interestingly, for the temple in Madras, when there was a plan to build one even at that time, in the 1970s, it didn't manifest yet. It's still on the way. The Prabhupada said it should be very gorgeous. Specifically said about in Madras. Anywhere we have so many temples and they're all nice, but it specifically said it should be very gorgeous. I was thinking because South India, it's the temples are gorgeous. There's so many beautiful temples here in South India. People put up. Of course, all of India people they visit temples, but in South India, especially, the temples are spectacular. In the Vallabh Sampradaya, the temples are not spectacular at all. They're deliberately not spectacular because they're called the Haveli. I mean, just like a house. It's Nanda Maharaj's house. Of course, Nanda Maharaj has a big palace, as described. But it just doesn't look like a temple, actually. So, also, the only temple that Prabhupada actually established in South India was in Hyderabad. And although it's not a very big plot of land, a very big temple, interestingly, I don't know if that was deliberate or whatever, but by far the biggest deities in ISKCON were established in Hyderabad. Radha, Madan Mohan, and Gaur-Nitai, very big, and Jagannath also. So very tall, big. These people in South India think the deities should be very big. There's so many huge deities, you know. Generally all of them, the Vishnu deities. Very big. big deities. Ranganatha Swami and Partha Sarathi is there, Chennai. Ananta Padmanabham, very big deities. Adi Keshav, in all these three states of South. Especially this far south, they're very big deities. But people are attracted to deity worship. So our deity worship, Gaudiya deity worship, is different. Many of the deities, almost all of them, of the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Radha Krishna deities, are quite small. Most of them are quite small. The Gaunatai deities are bigger, or Gaugadanta. But they're quite small. The devotees, it seems, they worship mostly, it was for their own personal bhajan. But our deity worship, it's different in as much as the way we dress the deities. And of course, in South India, they also offer flowers, but we don't see, like, in our time, they make lots of decorations. So people are attracted to deity worship, but at least in my estimation, the form of deity worship we do is even more attractive. So that's one way to attract people to Krishna. That's why he comes in the form of the deity, to accept the service of his devotees and to attract people to him. People become attracted to him. Even non-devotees, unless they're very envious, they become attracted to the beautiful form of the deity. If they're very envious or very unfortunate also. Before I came to live in India, at Bhaktivedanta Manor, one of the most beautiful temples, among Prabhupada's many beautiful temples, one man came for some outside man came to do some electric work. So I brought him into the temple room, and Radha Gokula Ananda were there. They said, "Oh, it's beautiful, the chandeliers, the walls, the flooring." He didn't see the deities at all. Didn't notice. I had to say, actually, this is what it's all about. Just last Janmashtami, my father with his second wife came to visit me at the same Bhaktivedanta Manor where every day the deity worship was. What to say? Beautiful? Well, you have to use some word. What shall we say? There's no word which properly describes it. You say beautiful, you think maybe some, you know, what is that? Some beautiful woman. Well, there is beautiful woman, the most beautiful, but her beauty exceeds that of even Lakshmi, what to speak of Indrani and Shivani and all these beautiful women, all the Apsaras. So I brought them into the temple of the Sringar, decorated, just super. What shall I say? There are no words to describe it, so I won't try anymore. But especially my father's second wife, she was just, she was awestruck and so happy. She's not a devotee. I guess she is a devotee, otherwise she... How could she appreciate? Everyone's a devotee. I mean, but she's not far from being a practicing devotee. Let's put it like that. You say an ordinary English woman. But she was so struck. How beautiful. So, if the deity worship is very beautiful, then definitely people will be attracted. And as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also said, that the people of South India, they know Lakshmi. They mostly call her Shri here, but they don't know Radha. So if we make the temple, the decoration of Radha and Krishna very attractive, then people's mind will gradually oh, it's very nice. And then the kirtan. Kirtan is the method of worship. Principle. What is the principal method of worshipping the deity? Is it the bell, or the dress, or the food item is kirtan in Kali Yuga? Yagyai sankirtana prayar yajanti hi sumit. Sankirtan, the Yagya Purush. Yagya Purush in Kali Yuga. That same Yagya Purush who accepts the offerings and the sacrifice, he accepts in the form of Sankirtan Yagya. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Yagya Purush, the personality, the enjoyer, and the personality who is in, accepts the offerings of Yagya. So Narada Muni is teaching this. He's not content simply to sit in Vaikuntha and worship the Lord. He is completely content to do that. What is there beyond this? But he also, because his desire to glorify the Lord is so great that he doesn't only glorify him in his personal presence, but he goes all over the universe and tries to bring others to Krishna and finds the means to do so. For Dhruva Maharaj, he told him, oh, you want a kingdom? Okay, here's what you do. Meditate on the Supreme Lord. And by the time Dhruva had done his severe meditation, he thought, well, he forgot about his kingdom. He's just, oh, Supreme Lord has appeared. How wonderful. And he said, that kingdom, you want? Well, kingdom, kingdom. Well, I don't want a kingdom, I want you. What do I want a kingdom for? Well, that's what you meditated on me for. No, I don't want it anymore. Anyway, take it. Oh, really? Okay, I guess I have to. You're God. So now I have to waste my time sitting in this material world. But if Narada told Dhruva in the beginning that you just meditate on the Supreme Lord, forget the king. You say, oh, forget the king, I forget you. What do I need you for? I want a kingdom. You're a devotee, okay, I'm not a devotee, I want a kingdom. I've been insulted. I've got to show I'm better than Lord Brahma. It was a pretty big ego, right, for a little boy. He wanted a kingdom better than that of Lord Brahma. Just a little boy, you know. Couldn't get on his father's lap. And his response, okay, I'm going to get a kingdom better than that of Lord Brahma. Big ambition. But then when Narada gave him a process by which, by the power of his determination, linked with a strong dose of Narada Muni's mercy and desire for him, Dhruva Maharaj's purification, he got the Supreme Lord. And he thought, what's the kingdom? It was such a big ambition. Most ambitious person in history, you could say. Forget Hitler, you know, he was just a small timer. He wanted a kingdom better than that of a realm of better than that of Lord Brahma. And then he saw he got the Supreme Lord and thought, oh, completely useless. So actually, Narad, he knew the actual ambition, which is much greater. People are ambitious. They think, what do you want this? Sitting and chanting Hare Krishna. You could be doing something better. You could be earning lots of money. You could be becoming a great hero. You could do, if you're not interested in money, well, you could be helping people, feeding the poor, earthquake relief, Greenpeace, ecology. You could be doing something useful for mankind. But Narad Muni, he understands that everything is insignificant in comparison to attaining Krishna consciousness. So, Dhruva Maharaj understood that, not in the beginning. He came by. Actually, he was given the sadhana for attaining pure devotional service. And the result was that he attained pure devotional service. But in the beginning, he had a different desire. Srila Prabhupada hasn't recommended that. In the Bhakta Godhead magazine, for a few issues, they were recommending, they had little pictures of people in the front saying, well, I chant Hare Krishna, I have a heavy responsibilities, but when I chant Hare Krishna, it helps to relieve me from stress. And it gives a picture of Dan Samuels, age 41, Dallas, Texas, printing manager, something like that. And then there's a picture of someone else. Well, I'm a housewife with three children, and I have a full-time job also, but chanting Hare Krishna helps me to manage everything. And then, you know, Eliza Perkins, 32, housewife and factory worker or whatever, Seattle, Washington, like this. And it is like to encourage people. Oh, the idea is that people are saying, oh, they're people, they're like me, and they're also chanting Hare Krishna, and they're getting benefit. Okay, I should do also. That was the idea. Prabhupada said, no, don't do that. Just preach. Chanting Hare Krishna to get love of Krishna. So he hasn't recommended this process, that we offer material benefits. Just tell them. It's a straight thing. Although Bhagavatam says, very famous verse, akama sarva kamava moksha kama udarathi tivrena bhakti yoga yajeta purusham param. If you have whatever desire you have, even if you are theoretically desireless, you desire bhakti worship Krishna, if you desire moksha, liberation, worship Krishna. And if you desire material benefit, worship Krishna. Tivrena is very intense. Dhruva Maharaj is the best example of intense worship. His material desires were fulfilled. Why then don't we recommend people to fulfill their material desires and then they may get the same result as Dhruva Maharaj? Well, one reason may be that in this age, people, the tivra bhakti or the tivra sadhana, they're a long way. Dhruva Maharaj ended up, what was it? He was taking dry leaves, and then he was taking just water, and then he was just taking air, then he stopped taking air altogether. But if we ask people to stop taking tea, that's already for them far more than they can imagine. We don't even tell people in the beginning. It's giving up tea. Now forget it, I'm going to go to Sai Baba. They give you free tea there. I don't think they do, they probably do. Mostly in all these yagyas, they have chai seva. It's considered mandatory. Everyone does it. It's like, you know, prasadi chai. We offer it first of all to Guruji, and then it's all prasad. So people are not fit for tivra bhakti. So they have to be informed at least in the beginning, they're not fit. They have to be informed. Nate vidu swartha gatin hi Vishnum. You're missing the point. You're missing the goal of life. The goal of life is Vishnu. Go that way. You're running in all directions. People in the modern age are very passionate. They can't sit still. They're running. So many things to do. Everyone's very busy. But they don't know what they should be busy for. Devotees are also busy enlightening others about Krishna. Trying to bring them this knowledge. Of course, devotees are also practicing Krishna consciousness themselves. And the kind of this kind of discussion we have, I mean, it's actually extremely elevated. We're thinking that, yeah, it's just another Bhagavatam class, you know, same thing we hear every day, but it's actually extremely exalted. Topics which most people, they can't understand. We have to really begin at the beginning when we're preaching Krishna consciousness, and even more so in the West. And preaching in the West, it's really, and it's not even ABC, it's more like, you know, holding their hand and showing them how to hold the chalk or the pen. Traditionally it's chalk. They're not even ready for ABC. It's really, people don't. People in India, they don't understand Prabhupada's sacrifice and going to the West and preaching to people who, and they have no idea of anything. Now there's maybe a little bit idea of something of Krishna consciousness. But, I mean, Prabhupada, the first initiation ceremony he performed, he did all the cooking, made all the arrangements himself, and then his disciples had no idea what it was supposed to be. So he said, "Thank you, Swamiji," and walked off, leaving him to clean up everything himself. So far away from any culture, what to speak of knowledge of the truth. Nowadays, various Gauriya gurus are very eager to go all over the world and preach, and they talk of very high topics, this, that, but all these people they can only talk high topics because that ground was prepared by Prabhupada, who very mercifully took the trouble and had the patience to teach kindergarten Krishna consciousness. So these discussions we're having, discussing Dhruv Maharaj, Narad Muni, and Vaikuntha, these are actually very elevated topics. We shouldn't be creepers, misers, and think that I have to go to preach, I have to discuss all these basic things, and again and again and again, we have to explain to people that the same thing, you know, the body, and you know, why drinking tea isn't good, and the same thing. You have to say, so boring, so much, you know, we have such a high topic, such a treasure, which is a fact. Our Gauriya culture is a very immensely rich treasure. Gauriya culture, all the whole Vedic culture is immensely rich. And even here in India, we have to nowadays people have no idea, speak very basic things, the same things over and over again. So we may think, well, it's just better to just we'll preach among our own group and we'll discuss all these topics. It's much more relishable, which in many ways it is. But we should take the example of Narad Muni, who, he's certainly able to relish on a level much higher than we are, but he doesn't neglect to go among the people and speak with them in such a way that they can become purified. Dhruva Maharaj says, "I want a kingdom." Narada says, "Okay, all right, very good. All right, now just sit down here in Vrindavan and bathe in the Yamuna and meditate on the Supreme Lord." You want a kingdom? All right, very good. Okay. So he mercifully comes down to the level of, not exactly comes down, but he lifts Dhruva from that very lowly stage. He accommodates him. Doesn't say, "You want a kingdom? You're in Maya. I'm going somewhere else. I'm going to go and discuss Rasalila." Didn't say anything about Rasalila or any Lila to him. He just said, "You do this, you chant Hare Krishna." Actually, not Hare Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudeva. Bathe in the Yamuna. That's an act of bhakti. People think that you bathe in the river, that's standard practice for yoga or just being a human being for that matter. But especially for purificatory activities, one has to bathe regularly, and especially bathing actually means in a river, best of all. Big river, especially, holy river. And then next best is what? Bathing in this, the river or the sea, and then bathing in a big body of water, then bathing in a less big body of water, then bathing with well water. And bathing in a tap is not mentioned anywhere. It doesn't really fit. So it's not really a bath according to the Vedic version. Using the same tap water that's, well, in the Western countries, it's been circulated from the stool sewage several times. And it comes through pipes. There used to be lead pipes, and that in itself makes it all impure. And plastic, I don't know what does, it's probably even worse. So, but anyway, what can you do? What shall we do? We tell people that, well, you can't, there's absolutely no hope of purification unless you live on the bank of the Yamuna, or the Ganga, or at least some river. If it's like that, how are you going to preach to anyone anything? You just walk out in the street in Salem and say, "Sir, the goal of life is to get free from birth and death and go to Krishna." "Oh, really? Okay, what do I have to do?" "Well, give up your home and go and live on the bank of the Kaveri, at least. Otherwise, no hope." So, wouldn't have a very good bhakti program. And even if there was any success, then all the businessmen would buy up all the plots of land on the bank of the Kaveri and put the price up 20 times. So they're already doing that, of course, in Sri Lanka, to get a plot in Kaveri Naga, was there a new, fairly new housing area. So land in Sri Lanka is very high because all the Iyengars are off in America and earning tons of money, so it became very expensive. So what's that got to do with Dhruva Maharaj? Nothing. That's the answer. But what's the asking people to chant Hare Krishna? That's practical. Sthane stita gyane prayasam Well, people in Kali Yuga, they have it easy because Lord Brahma said to give up the attempt to understand everything by knowledge, but people in Kali Yuga don't have to give up that attempt because they have absolutely no idea about cultivating knowledge. So they got one advantage. Of course, it's they have to be told, "Papam prayasa udapas," give up all your attempts for sinful life. Whatever it is, whatever you're attached to, namanta eva, become humble. Well, Dhruva Maharaj had that quality. He was humble enough to accept the advice of Narad Muni. He accepted a guru. What's the next line? Namanta eva. Then, Gane prayasam udapajana manda eva jivanti sammukharitam bhavadiya vartam. And then you live. How are you going to live your life? By hearing about Krishna from devotees. Sthane stita. No need for any big change immediately. If the big change will is not that you have to leave your home or whatever situation, you can go on in your situation, but the change has to be shutikatang tanuvang manobhir. One should go on hearing and dedicate one's mind, life, body for this in whatever situation you're in. And ye prayasha jitititopi apitai strilokam. He who is unconquerable in all the worlds is generally conquered by this endeavor, if one does that. So this we're preaching. It's a selfless task that one who is selfish cannot do this. One who is thinking of the benefit of others. So Narad Muni is our guru. He's thinking of the benefit of others. He travels constantly and preaches. And then one time he sat down in Vrindavan and wrote the book, compiled the book, Narada Pancharatra, for the benefit of people in general. So we should follow that example and try to act for the benefit of others. And that will be very pleasing to Narad Muni. And automatically we will be benefited. If we only think, what's best for me? How can I benefit? Of course, in the beginning, one has to be at least somewhat fixed in Krishna consciousness. But instead of thinking, what's good for me? If we think, how can I best serve the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what can I do for that? Then automatically our own self-interest will be served. We don't have to think of anything. You know, often people, not often, all the time, devotees come and say, you know, the mind can't control it, and this, the tongue can't control it, so many bad thoughts come in the mind. And what do you do? Well, my answer is, personally, I gave up years ago thinking I could ever conquer my mind. It's just hopeless. So you just do whatever you can for the serving Prabhupada's mission, and all that nonsense is going on in the background and sometimes in the foreground also, but you just have to give it a bang and go on with serving the Sankirtan mission. And then if we become absorbed in acting for serving Prabhupada's mission, then even though all these strange things are going on, extremely strange things going on, but we just don't give much importance to it. There's the mind again. Okay, well, all right. Just shut up. I've got other things to do. Here, think about something else. We have to. How are we going to make a big festival? And my senses are agitated. But anyway, there's a festival coming up, so let's get into that. And then you get into it, and then what happened to the senses? I forgot about them. Oh, now I have to remember what to do. But you forgot about it, so then you didn't have any problem. So it's automatic. Otherwise, the mind by nature is always oscillating, for it is very fickle. As Prabhupada writes in this purport. So, Hare Krishna, any question about this? Comment? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. You have a question?
You said in the lecture that all yoga other than bhakti yoga is like a stepping stone.
Yeah.
So when it is said that in Satya,
all other yogas are a stepping stone to bhakti yoga. So in Satya Yoga, dhyana, the system is dhyana. Yeah, that is the yoga dharma, that is dhyana. The dhyana which is directly centered on Krishna, that's also bhakti yoga. But the processes of yoga, which are karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, which are conceived of as being processes which in themselves lead to a goal, that is a misunderstanding. And people have to come out of that misunderstanding and come to a higher level. Just like if one is performing karma yoga, if one is following the Vedic karma kanda, then the goal is to enjoy by the Vedic method, delights of heaven. Then if there is, of course, karma yoga is defined differently in different contexts, but if there's an admixture of jnana, then one becomes more conversant with the principles of dharma. It's like a trick, because one has to follow dharma. If one is not following dharma, by adharma one cannot go to heaven. One has to follow dharma, but dharma trains one to be selfless. So there's a beginning there. And then gradually one comes to realize, either by seeing or by hearing from others, or a mixture, that actually what's the use of all this going to heaven? Karmana Parinam. There's that verse that everything in this material world, from Brahma, planet, down to the common example is given. From Brahma to the stamba, to the clump of grass, everything in this world is full of misery. So considering this, one should not endeavor for material happiness. So then one can come to the jnana marg and try to get free from the conditions of material life. So like this, when it's conceived of without a clear understanding that the ultimate goal is bhakti, then it's considered a stepping stone. So the dhyana process, by which one controls the mind and senses, these are preliminary activities which can help to purify one. But if one doesn't get the proper direction, then one can go off in the wrong direction. But they are activities which are, at some level, purifying. That's why it's said that the sannyasis of Varanasi, who came in contact with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they were already pious in one sense, because they were following Vedic principles, they were austere, they studied the Vedas. They were also offensive. On one side they were pious, on the other side they were offensive. But their piety enabled them, when the offense was removed, to very quickly understand and accept that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the personality of Godhead. Of course, by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, even most sinful persons were able to accept that. But we see practically that people who have a sinful background and who take to Krishna consciousness, they accept the process, but it's often very difficult for them to overcome their bad impressions from the past. Whereas if pious people who have a background of piety take to Krishna consciousness, then they don't have that. People in India in general, they don't have the same kind of background of sinful activities and sinful attachments to overcome as those from the West. So it's an advantage. It can also, if one doesn't take it in the right spirit, that advantage can again become a disadvantage, because if one thinks, well, I'm better, I'm Indian, these Westerners are all rubbish. If you start thinking like that, then the advantage of the advantage is lost by pride. Hare Krishna. Yeah, there's another question.
Narada is traveling and preaching and benefiting people, but how does Narada want the kind of he is famous in India, like one who creates conflicts and like that.
Narada is famous for creating conflicts. Sometimes people who are creating conflicts, they're called a Narada. Is it in Tamil? They say Narada. Well, he does that also. Not whimsically. But sometimes he does that to expedite matters. You know what that means? It means to bring matters to a conclusion more quickly. Just like he reported to Kamsa that all the demigods have taken birth in the families of the Yadavas, and all they're your enemies, but you don't know how bad they are because they're the demigods. You've got to watch out, because the demigods are not just little fairies that you can flick aside. So then Kamsa, he instituted a program for torturing the Yadus, and in this way he hastened his own end by committing more offenses. So there's an example of Narad effecting the pastimes of the Lord by creating some dissension. Or sometimes for serving the pastimes of the Lord, he may apparently turn Krishna's queens against each other, and Krishna enjoys the pleasure of seeing their different natures in conflict. That's also on the platform of Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. That's something pleasing. So many of these points, they're not understandable unless one has a very thorough grounding in the principles of Bhagavat Tattva and Rasa Tattva. On the train, this Periya fan was speaking to you and asking, or challenging, what was that he was saying? How can a woman have five husbands? But questions like that, that's not good. And so people in India, they have this knowledge, and then people come out with these objections, and they don't understand it. Because unless one is trained to understand it, or the background of that, of who is Krishna, what is his Leela, then all these points of Leela, they're taking place for affecting Krishna's pastimes, which are transcendental. So people don't understand it, and then they criticize. And it seems that the critics are right. For the persons who are not trained in spiritual knowledge. Although even to date, most people in India, even without training in spiritual knowledge, even without being philosophical, they understand that Krishna's pure and special, and therefore that he can do all these things and he's still pure and special, and they don't blame Krishna. But many people are confused. So again, we have to give spiritual knowledge. We have a great responsibility to do that, to teach all these points. I wouldn't have discussed that point with him at all. I would just tell him that to understand these things requires a qualification. You don't have it. You have to, just like to understand higher mathematics, you have to acquire the qualification. You have to take the training. You can say that the example Prabhupada often gave is that great sannyasis, who themselves are completely pure in their character, they accepted Krishna as the Supreme Lord. They didn't have a hang-up. So, prima facie, we can accept. That means immediate evidence without... The immediate evidence, without going into all the details, the immediate evidence, that's a legalistic term, it means like at face value. We can accept that even if we don't understand, people who by their behavior are living a very moral life, they accept Krishna. And they're not just moral, but they're very great philosophers also. So like that. I wouldn't discuss Leela with... I don't discuss Leela with these people at all. I just tell them that you're not fit for that. You have to take training. And you can understand.